What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 48. Today, we're going to be talking about all the health benefits of bone broth and why you should try and get that in your diet. But first, do a little check-in. And this one's going to be a little bigger than normal. I already know what Tom's going to talk about. So, Tom, what's new?
Nothing much. Nothing big eventful happened this week. Same old, same old. Oh, except this weekend I got engaged.
There you go.
Yeah, so I guess a little bit of life-changing circumstances happened.
For sure.
Yeah.
How'd that all go down?
It was a pretty big day. We went to Monterey for the day. Spent a lot more time there than we anticipated.
It was a one-day thing?
It was a one-day thing. We kind of drank a little bit more than we were planning, so we had to hang out there for a lot longer than anticipated.
Got it.
You know, we were celebrating, so it was nice.
Were you nervous?
Not really, because we were drinking.
Oh, okay.
That kind of took away the nerves.
Yeah. Did you have any suspicion that it was going to happen?
Kind of, because I was wearing, like, shorts, and, like, they're thin, so she saw something in my pocket.
Oh, okay.
So she kind of knew, but we were, like, wine tasting for most of the afternoon while we were in Monterey, so whatever suspicions she had went away.
Yeah, dissolved.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. So where, like, where in Monterey did you do it?
So
I mean, like, obviously by the ocean.
So, like, there's Cannery Row is, like, kind of where everything is. There's, like, a nice little hotel. We were just kind of walking. There's a little beach area that we were going to go at. But she kept stopping and, like, trying to take selfies. So I just got tired of, I was like, all right, fine. Like, we're just going to stop here. Like, I'll just do it here. Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody had their, we were with a couple of her cousin.
It wasn't just you two?
No, it wasn't just us. We met up with her cousin, her cousin's boyfriend, and he had a friend. So we had three different people out there just taking pictures, videotaping everything. And then there's like kind of like a big audience around too. Like once everybody kind of saw what was happening, a lot of people came and like watched. It was a little weird.
Okay. That's cool though.
Yeah. And then we took like, 1,000 pictures like on the beach and everything.
Yeah, I was wondering, I thought the people who took pictures of you were, like, random people. And I was like, damn, they were right on the shit with those pictures.
Oh, no.
But you had people there.
Yeah, really. Okay. People.
Yeah. Well, that's cool, man. How long did you have it all planned out?
Because
you've been dating a while. How long have you been dating?
4.5 years.
Yeah.
So, like, I wasn't too nervous because I was pretty sure she was going to say yes.
Yeah, at this stage of the game, for sure.
It was more of, like, a about time than anything.
For sure.
I knew I was going to do it, just wasn't sure on the right circumstances. We both have been really busy. So it was mostly just like, oh, hey, we can get away right now. Let's just go.
Just do it.
Yeah.
So what's the plans for the wedding?
So she just started a new job, and she's going to school for cosmetology. So her program is going to end in 2 years. So we're thinking right when she's done with that.
Okay.
Because right now, money's going to be a little tight for the next couple years.
So 2-year engagement.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that'll give her time to plan it out.
Yeah, and she wants to have, like, a traditional wedding. Like,
really?
If she wanted to go to Vegas, we could do that today.
I thought that's maybe what you guys would do.
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, have a big wedding, have all the friends, all the family there. It'll be a good time.
Okay. That'll be cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been to a family on my, like, side of the family in a long time, but I guess I go to my wife's family's, it feels like, every other week. But weddings are fun. Yeah, I'm totally down for a good wedding.
Yeah, so that's it for me. What about you?
Yeah. Well, shit, man. Compared to that, nothing this week. God. I've just... I wrote in the carb, I mean, in our little show notes, what I'm going to talk about right now, and I said, just wrote carbs, because I've been, like, you know, I'm always about, like, I'm trying to diet, or I'm trying to gain weight, I'm trying to look good, all this type of shit, and there's just a huge, I don't know, conflict. Like, when you diet, naturally at least, you're going to be, like, in a catabolic state. You're going to be burning tissue. And I don't care who you are, if you're doing it naturally, you're going to lose some muscle. You know what I mean? It's just how it is. And every time I really try and diet hard, I always, at least in my eyes, I get way too skinny. And, like, it's just hard putting on muscle. So when I start seeing myself lose muscle, I want to just abort. I'm like, abort mission, you know, I need to change things up. I need to switch it up. So I've actually been really, and I've been zero carb, like carnivore, for a while now. And I love it. I'm healthy. I'm strong. But there really might be something to the whole carbs and muscle thing. So I'm thinking, well, first, you don't need carbs for build muscle. Like, to build muscle, all you really need is protein and a fuel source. But the whole reason I'm thinking I'm starting to add carbs post-workout. So what I've been doing is I'm adding 500 milliliters of milk post-workout. So a raw goat milk. And I just feel so, I guess, lucky to have, one, to have access to it. Like, how many people have access to local raw goat milk?
Is this your goat?
Oh, it's about to be my goat. It's about to be the localist, but no, not yet. Oh,
okay.
But it will be eventually, but that is, that's pretty unique. You know, most people can't get that. And on top of it, I do fine with dairy, right? And I want to take advantage of that because I think raw goat milk, or just raw milk in general, from a nutritional standpoint, is so nutrient dense, you know?
Well, it's supposed to be like a meal in one for a growing baby.
Everything the body needs, yeah. Right? Yeah. So I want to take advantage of that. And because the other carb source will be white rice. But I mean, if you compare white rice and milk, it's like not even, it's not a fair fight.
You're talking super nutrient dense and then the complete opposite.
Yeah, basically. One nutrient, literally just starch. And I think that has a role in a diet for sure. But if I handle milk, I want to try and use milk. So my thing is to get a little bit more of an insulin spike post-workout. And there's a whole, like, genetic pathway called mTOR that is kind of the body's signal to produce just gains, just to be more anabolic, so to put on muscle to build tissue. Protein will activate mTOR, specifically leucine, but it's pretty transient, right? It happens for maybe 45 minutes, an hour. Insulin will activate mTOR for maybe 3 or 4 hours. So let's say 4x more activation than protein itself. So I'm thinking I pair this protein post-workout, it'll always be ground heart, that's just what I eat, with some carbohydrates. It's really about 30 grams if I measured it out, so it's really not that much carbs, but it's enough to give me some insulin response. I don't know, just see if I keep my size as I diet.
Well, the carbs should, I don't know if they'll make you stronger, but they should at least kind of make your muscles look fuller.
I hope so.
With, like, with stored glycogen, you're also going to store some water with that.
Yeah.
So they should be bigger. I don't know if that's actually making you stronger or anything like that, or if that's just, you know, just appearances.
Hey, man, at this stage, I'll take appearances. Yeah. Shit. I mean, there is a whole, like, protein does stimulate muscle protein synthesis, and that's what the body does to build muscle. And the thing is, like, your body, like, in the blood, you'll have amino acids elevated. That triggers muscle protein synthesis, but that only lasts for, like, 30 minutes. It doesn't last very long, right? And your amino acids are still going to be elevated in your blood, but it doesn't last that long. They don't know why, but they do think maybe literally the cell runs out of ATP. Like, maybe the cell simply runs out of gas because building muscle is so energy intensive. So that's one of the reasons I always take magnesium post-workout. Because like we talked about in the magnesium podcast, every magnesium molecule in our body is bound to ATP. So if energy is a problem, I'm going to give myself a little bit more magnesium, and hopefully I have 2 more ATP in my muscle cells, right? Just a little bit more. But we talked about a million times, sugar, super fast fuel, right? So if energy is a problem with muscle protein synthesis, maybe a little bit of sugar can go to my muscles and give myself, again, 1% more muscle protein synthesis. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. And milk is probably, I mean, it's definitely the most natural form of getting, like, protein and sugar in one source.
In one source. Yeah. So that's my logic behind it. And like, I don't think I can call myself, like, a zero-carb guy anymore. Not that I really give a shit, but it's just, I don't know. I just, if the goal is to be leaner and more muscular, if it means I need to introduce carbs to get that goal, then so be it. Like, I'm not married to the whole zero carb movement, you know?
Well, you should still stay in ketosis 23 and a half hours out of the day.
Yes, 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't think I'm in ketosis post-workout anyways. I think I take in so much protein right in that short window that that protein probably kicked me out anyways.
Well, I don't think a lot of people are in ketosis after they work out, depending on the type, just because of how much cortisol is stimulated and how much, like, just glycogen or glucose is...
Sugar's around.
Yeah, so much mm-hmm. glucose is needed to fuel your exercise that you're probably not in ketosis during your exercise.
Yeah, like, maybe you didn't eat the sugar, but the sugar's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so I'm not worried about that either, but I will still be... I still think it's still a healthy diet. It's still an optimal diet, but I just need to just see how it goes, and if the goal is to just keep a little bit more size and not get too skinny, that's what I'm going to have to do.
Well, you got it dialed in at this point, so any little tweaks, you should notice a difference.
I should notice a difference, yeah. So, we'll see.
I know I can't do that.
I know, right? That sucks for you.
That'll be a one-day experiment.
I know. And so, honestly, I don't know if you're in the minority. I mean, in the majority, but there's a lot of people out there who are sensitive to dairy, for sure.
I think there's a lot more out there that just don't know it because they've never taken a break.
They never cut it out.
Yeah, yeah, once you take that break and then you reintroduce it, that's how you find out.
Yeah, and it's usually not the best test.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so this week we want to get into bone broth and specifically kind of what's all behind that. It's kind of it's a buzzword right now.
Yeah, it's really popular right now, which is kind of a bad thing because it is so expensive in grocery stores at the moment.
Is it? I've never bought it. Is it?
Yeah, you're talking... A lot of them sell them for like $7, and you get, I don't know, 2-3 cups out of it.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I just pour it in a coffee cup and drink it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I consume it. When I make it at home, I buy the bones they're $2 a pound, mm-hmm. the place I get them from. If I buy them from the grocery store, it's $6 a pound. And from that, I'll make, I don't know, 10 servings. 30 servings, somewhere around there.
Just how much water you want to use.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so much tastier. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fat in there. You're actually getting the real bone marrow itself, not the filtered stuff from this.
Whatever's in that shit.
Yeah.
No, that's true. So yeah, why don't we just go into what really is the main thing in bone broth that we like? Like, what's the main, like, protein?
So it's going to be collagen protein. Collagen is kind of what makes up all your connective tissue. So it's skin, bones, ligaments, tendons, cartilage, even the cornea and the lens of your eyes.
Yeah, collagen is, honestly, I think if you're out there and you're weight training, say you're like a 50-year-old female, you start lifting weights, and there's something glamorous about collagen protein, isn't it? Like, it sounds kind of fancy. Like, if I tell you to take a whey shake, that comes off like a gym bro type shit. But collagen, like, oh, your grandma can take collagen. It's different. But really, I think if you're out there, you're lifting weights, just take a whey protein shake. But collagen has so many different uses. Like, it really is, it's the most abundant protein in the entire body. About 15% of our dry weight is collagen. And that's just, your dry weight is just your weight without water. And people think of, like, joints and skin when they really think about collagen. But this stuff really is everywhere. Like, it gives strength to all of our tissues. They connect, like, adjacent cells in our bodily organs, giving them structure. So without collagen, we wouldn't simply fall apart at the joints, like knees and elbows. We would literally disintegrate into small piles of individual cells. That's how abundant collagen is in our body. It's everywhere.
Yeah, so the most abundant amino acid in collagen is glycine. And if you follow Paul Saladino...
Loves glycine.
He loves his glycine.
Yeah.
So, here's a couple of the highlights of glycine. So, it's one of the three amino acids that makes glutathione. That's the master antioxidant. It protects cells from oxidative stress, which means it's good for damn near every single organ in your body. It's also one of the three amino acids that makes creatine. So, that also means that it's great for every single cell in your body.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, those are two, like... We can't, like, emphasize enough how important glutathione and creatine are. They're real vital things.
Yeah, if you want to move, if you want any sort of energy production, you need creatine. if you want to save yourself from oxidative stress, which is...
Cancer.
I think oxidative stress pretty much causes every single chronic disease out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want glutathione.
The other two is glutamine and methionine, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Those are abundant in meat. But glycine's really abundant in this collagen and this bone broth.
Yeah, that's what makes it different. And what's his name?
Saladino.
God, I could always mess that up. He really argues that glycine is kind of the limiting factor in glutathione production. Like, he says most people need to supplement with glycine. But whatever. I don't know if he's right or wrong, but...
Yeah, so another benefit of collagen is proline. And this is really great when it comes to cell repair, or skin repair. So one thing it does is simulates cell migration when skin is damaged. So the platelets that need to come to that damaged spot, it simulates that type of movement. And then it also supports collagen synthesis. So the formation of those platelets and the buildings of like new tissue at that spot. So the combination of those two repairs skin damage. So when you get a cut, you want platelets rushing over there to stop the bleeding. And then you want new skin, a scab to form, and that's collagen.
Yeah, exactly. And that's true. The whole supports collagen synthesis is a big thing. It's not simply... I read a study where they gave people 2.5 grams of collagen, which ain't shit. That's like... We're talking about like a teaspoon of protein powder, right? And they said it promoted the body's own process of building collagen. So it's not that that collagen itself really helped. It's just it triggered the body to make more collagen. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah, that's really helpful. I mean, there's so much like damage and repairs that need to go on in our bodies that we're just not even aware of.
Yeah, not even aware of at all. Yeah. And I mean, up until this point, what we all talked about, you can get that in like a collagen protein powder. And if you really don't want to make bone broth yourself, go ahead and get a collagen protein powder. But there are so many other things in bone broth that make it stand out, that make it a superfood, that make it worth your time and investment making and learning how to make it.
Yeah, we talk about all the time where, yeah, you can get the macronutrients from supplements or from certain foods, but it's really the micronutrients, the stuff that's not on the label, that really makes a difference and really changes the bioavailability of the food.
Exactly, yeah. And so that's what it's really about, is how your body absorbs and actually utilizes these foods. So this is a quick quote I pulled from one of these studies. So simmering bones in water extracts many constituents contained in them, like proteins, amino acids, glucosamine, hyaluronic acid, chondroitin sulfate, minerals, vitamins, and other trace substances. Bone broth is an excellent source of minerals. Since these naturally derived minerals are extracted from bones, they are in an ideal balance and easily utilized by the body. And I think that the last sentence is really key. Easily utilized by the body. They're not just some supplement, not just some pill where they're like jamming a bunch of chondroitin or glucosamine together. It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that, all designed to make our body actually use this stuff. And that's what's really important. All right, before we get into all the different parts of bone broth, let's hear a little ad from me. TNT, wellnessandnutrition.com, whole food nutrition rediscovered. If you are struggling looking to improve your health or optimize your lifestyle, you can sign up for a custom meal plan on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com. Back to today's topic. All right, the first thing we want to talk about, which are kind of the extra stuff you're going to get from bone broth specifically, is glycosaminoglycans. And that's a big-ass name, I'm sorry, but that's just what they're called. So these form proteoglycans, and they're structures that make up the connective tissues and synovial fluid. They are highly polar and attract water. Therefore, they're useful for the body as a lubricant or as a shock absorber.
So think of your joints. That's where these are vital for.
Vital for, exactly.
You want your joints to be nice and lubricated. You want those to move around without any issues.
Yeah, nice and spongy, things like that. And actually, to bring this back to myself, I have an old back injury, though I feel like I talk about every other month, it seems like. But the few discs in my lower back actually have no more synovial fluid in them. They've ruptured and they're just completely gone. So my discs, talk about not being spongy, they're the exact fucking opposite. And does it suck? Sure it does. But you know, it is what it is, you know? Yeah, these proteoglycans, the main ones, are keratinin sulfates, dermatan sulfates, chondroitin sulfates, and hyaluronic acid.
So the next one we want to talk about is bone marrow. So bone marrow is almost all fat. It's 97% fat. And because of that, it's a great source of your omega-3 fatty acids. It's also rich in minerals, calcium, iron, magnesium, manganese, phosphorus, selenium, zinc. All the minerals that you need for your body. So this is a little bit of speculation because there's not a whole lot of studies on like the real benefits of bone marrow. But in your bone marrow, that's where you store your stem cells. So because of that, they're thinking that it's going to be great for red blood cell formation, platelets, and also white blood cells. White blood cells are your immune cells.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah, you talk about not being a lot of studies on bone broth specifically. I know. I can only find one. I'll talk about it in a minute. But it kind of goes into the fact that this is a, who's making money off bone broth?
Nobody. The butchers are giving away bones.
Giving away bones. So there's no real studies on this stuff. And actually, it kind of sucks, but it is what it is. Yeah, talk about an expensive supplement. The supplement MSM and glucosamine, we've seen those in the store. How much do those things cost?
So, like, individually, they're, I don't know, like, $15-$20 for, like, a month supply. But if you buy the combination of MSM, glucosamine, and chondroitin, that's, like, a $60 pill. That's, like, one of the most, and that's, like, a month supply. That's, like, one of the most expensive supplements you're going to find at your GNC or Vitamin Shop or whatever one of those stores.
Yeah, that's, like, a damn drug habit, honestly. Like, it's really expensive. And those three things, MSM, glucosamine, chondroitin, you're going to get in bone broth. So there's no need to supplement with those when you are drinking bone broth, you know, at least a few times a week. What I, the kind of the rabbit hole I went down with this is, how absorbable are these nutrients? Like, we've talked about omega-3s before. We talked about ALA. You know how many people talk about flaxseeds and omega-3s?
Yeah, they just don't understand that you're only getting 10% of that if you're lucky.
Because it's not absorbed. Yeah. Right? And I was like, okay, so that made me think, I was like, so what amount of this, of these supplements, these glucosaminoglycans are actually absorbed, right? So I found a study on chondroitin specifically, which is one of the primary ones, and it pretty much put a radioactive label on it and then tracked it throughout the body. And it said that more than 70% of the orally administered radioactivity was absorbed. I was like, okay, cool, 70%, I'll take that. But where is it going? And it said that the analysis of the molecular weight of the radioactive material showed that compounds with a molecular weight corresponding with chondroitin were present in the plasma, urine, synovial fluid, and cartilage. And those last two, I was like, okay, cool, boom. That's exactly where we want chondroitin to go. So that's a good sign that our body actually does know what this shit is and does know where to put it.
Yeah, there's speculation that we've been consuming like bone broth for at least 20,000 years, probably more than that.
Yeah.
I'm willing to bet once we figured out we have fire, we probably had bone broth.
We're cooking bones. Yeah, exactly. So the only study I could find that actually showed a benefit of real bone broth, and I'm talking go buy beef bones, or not even, just go buy bones from the butcher and boil those bitches, was one done on rabbits. And couldn't find any on humans, sorry. But it is what it is. This study is still pretty legit, in my opinion. So, in rabbits, they broke the rabbit's arms. And then, this which sounds terrible. Don't call PETA on me or whatever. But they broke that rabbit's arm and let it heal for 5 weeks. They gave one group bone broth, derived from beef bones, made in the traditional fashion of slow cooking. And then they gave the control group no bone broth. Other than that, their environment was controlled. Their diet was the same. And at the end of the 5 weeks, the group fed the bone broth had significantly increased bone density. And they measured that through a CT. And here's a quote here. At the end of the 5th week, in the experimental group given the bone broth, their density had a value of 510. And the control group had a value of 261. So the experimental group almost had double the bone density. And so it said the difference between the experimental and control group was highly significant. So it just showed that the concentrated bone broth shows highly significant increases in bone density at the end of the 5th week and compared with control group. The evaluation shows significant improvement in the healing process at the site of the break at the end of the 5th week in comparison with the control group. So that's pretty cool.
Who knew that bone broth would be good for your bones?
Crazy, right?
Damn, nutrition's hard, man.
I don't know why everyone makes it hard. Like, it's just crazy. So
eating mussels is good for your muscles. Bones is good for your bones. Like,
I know.
The organ is good for whatever organ you want it to be. You eat your brain, it's good for your brain. Heart is good for your heart.
Like, it's a pretty good...
it's not that difficult, man.
Yeah, it's really not that difficult, yeah.
See, that was a nutritional course right there. You don't need to become a nutritionist. That's all you need to understand.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Yeah, so it said, in conclusion, this study demonstrates that concentrated bone broth as a dietary supplementation improves significantly the healing process. And I was like, man, that's really cool. Like, I'm really... It just, I don't know, it helped solidify with me that this stuff really is pretty good.
I don't know if this is the best example or not, because he didn't really fully recover from his Achilles injury. But Kobe Bryant, who has spent so much money on trying to take care of his body, battling all the different injuries that he's had, one of the major things that he did after he had his Achilles injury is he was consuming bone broth every single day. The nutritionist on the Lakers was calling hotels ahead of time, being like, oh, hey, you need to start this bone broth, gave him the specific bone broth recipe, and he would know the difference. And I don't think that's a person you want to make mad and like mess up his bone broth.
Definitely not, yeah. Yeah, and actually the lady who controlled the diets for the Lakers, I don't know if she still does it, but I know she did it then. I actually read her book just recently, and she talked about bone broth so much. Like, she's, it's called Deep Nutrition, if you're interested. And it's a pretty good book. She's, I don't agree with everything. You know, I think I talked about you last week. Yeah. She actually does talk about anti-nutrients. She made some, like, dumb shit about egg whites, and then she tells everybody to eat, like, raw vegetables and raw nuts. And so I don't agree with everything she says. But as far as bone broth goes, she knows what she's talking about.
And she was talking about it before it was cool.
For sure. Yeah, she was. And that's a good sign, you know? But, yeah, so the recipe that I personally use, so I've never actually bought bone broth from the store. I just make bone broth at home. And this is something I've recently started doing because I was the guy who just had a collagen protein powder for the longest time. I was like, you know, it's good enough. Like, I don't care. I already do enough shit. I was like, I already cook enough every day. I don't need to make more things. But after reading that book and after Dino Tom's making bone broth longer than me, I was like, okay, I need to, that's a hole in my game. Like, I need to, you know, I need to improve that. So I've been making bone broth this way. So I personally prefer beef just because of the nutrient density. But honestly, you can use any bones you want, really. Beef shank and knuckle bones is what I use. The knuckle bones are just full of cartilage and tendons and all that good shit we want. And beef shanks kind of just add flavor, just that real beefy taste. And they consist of bones filled with marrow, muscle, and connective tissues. And best of all, it's one of the cheaper cuts. And like I said, beef knee bones as well for the collagen and gelatin content. You can also use leftover bones from the week. So do you do that with yours?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Because I get bones really cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So I never really thought of it. And most of the time, if I'm eating a steak, the bone from that is pretty small.
Yeah.
And one thing I do is if the marrow is cooked enough, I'll scoop out some of the marrow from like a T-bone or something like that.
And you eat it straight?
Yeah, that's delicious.
That's disgusting.
It's so good.
Oh my god, is it really?
Yeah.
I bet it is. It's all fat, and fat tastes good, but...
I mean, it doesn't really have much of a flavor other mm-hmm. than it's just fat.
Okay.
A couple other things that I've used in the past, I've used a pig's foot, which has all the skin on it. Mm. That skin is just straight collagen, so it's another great source. The only problem with a pig's foot is that there's so many little bones in there, so you're definitely going to have to run that through a strainer. If you don't want bones in it.
Yeah.
I make some for myself, and then I also make some for my dogs. So the skin grosses me out. It's all slimy when you're done cooking it. So I don't really want to be drinking that and then just get that big chunk of skin.
Ugh.
So I say that for my dogs. So like I had to take out all the bones individually. It was such a pain in the ass. I don't know if I'm going to use that again.
One by one. Yeah, that sucks. But yeah, so you can use those beef bones, knee bones. You can use leftover bones from the week. Like, my wife eats, like, pork chops damn near every day, so I have a lot of just pork bones, so I throw those in there, too. And you just add, first off, what you want to do with these bones is put them in the oven for maybe 20 or 30 minutes, cook them at about 400 degrees, and when you pull them out, they're going to look nasty. They're going to look kind of, like, black, and that's okay. It's a good thing. And then for me personally, I put them in a pressure cooker. You cover them with water. You add in a few tablespoons of vinegar. It can be apple cider vinegar or anything that's kind of acidic. And then you pressure cook them on high for about 45 minutes. And you don't use a pressure cooker. What do you use?
I just use a crock pot, set it to low, like the simmering, and leave it on for a day, 2 days, 3 days, kind of just depending on how the bones look. It really depends on how big the bones are.
Okay.
So if I use beef marrow bones, those are a pretty good size. It takes longer. The pork bones I've been getting from the farmer's market, they're a lot smaller. Don't take as long.
Don't take as long. Okay. See, that's just, I don't have the time. Initially, when you were telling me what you do, like, that is such a turnoff for me. Do this for 3 days. Even though you're not doing shit, I just couldn't do it.
Well, you're putting bones in a crock pot. You're putting water in that crock pot. You're plugging the crock pot in, and you're turning it on. And then you just forget about it.
No, can't do it. And I know. If I'm doing it, I want to do it now. So that's why I bought the pressure cooker. I have an Instant Pot now. And but yeah, if you don't mind doing that, setting and forgetting anything, a crock pot's a great way to go, honestly.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd recommend like putting that on your stove and leaving your stove on for a few days, especially if you have like a gas one.
Yeah.
I mean, like if that fire goes out because you got to keep it on low, and then you're just leaking gas into your house. I don't know if I recommend that.
Yeah, maybe get a what do you call a pressure cooker in that sense. Yeah, or another crock pot. But yeah, I guess shout out to initially when I started making bone broth, I went to the butcher, and I get along with everybody there. They're all really cool people. But the girl there named Cindy, shout out to Cindy. I don't know if she listens to this or not, but she's like the bone broth expert. So she's the one who initially told me this whole recipe and how to do it, and it turned out great. But she also said to add the apple cider vinegar. And I was like, okay. But I really wanted to. And you've heard that too. You've heard people add apple cider vinegar to your bone broth.
You know, I've heard it mentioned 1,000 times, but I've never really looked into it. And I haven't been doing it personally. I'm going to start now.
Yeah.
Have you came across this?
Yeah. So I was like, okay. You know me, like I'm not the type of guy just to be told shit. Like, I really want to know what's going on. Like, if you're going to tell me something, you need to back it up with some stuff. If it doesn't make just, like, kind of logical sense to me. So, well, I went home that day, and of course, for this podcast, I went and looked into studies showing, does adding apple cider vinegar, or does lowering pH help with mineral extraction from bones? And sure as shit, it does. So, I looked into a study, and they made various bone broths from either pigs or cows, and they use different pH values. And pH is just a measure of acidity. So a low pH would be acidic, and a high pH would be basic. So the current test, this is a quote from the study, the current test results further verify that cooking time and pH significantly affected the calcium concentration in the broth. Hence, a very low pH of the broth might be needed to extract more than 10 to 20 times more calcium and magnesium from bones. So it really did make a difference, adding apple cider vinegar. And that's what they added to this, was apple cider vinegar.
10 to 20 times more. That's a lot. That's really significant. Like, I'm going to definitely go out and buy some apple cider vinegar and start adding it.
Yeah, for sure. It really is a lot.
I mean, if it's like 1 to 2 times and it's like, okay, maybe not. But 10 to 20, that's a big difference.
It's worth it.
Yeah, and vinegar is really cheap.
Yeah, and you don't like really overthink it. Just pour some vinegar in there and, you know, set it and forget it, you know. So
yeah, I'm not going to measure that shit.
Yeah, don't measure it. Just pour some in there. You'll be all right. But this did make me think, because Cindy as well, she mentioned, and I know this to be true, that our body does store things in our bones. So I've looked into this when we talked about, I think it was magnesium again. There's fluoride in a lot of medications we take, a lot of creams for our skin, even our toothpaste.
Our water,
yeah. So fluoride will actually bind to magnesium, and our body will stash it in our bones. So our bones can be kind of high in fluoride, and it does very similar things to other heavy metals. So I was like, okay, do cooking the bones for this long, or even under high pressure, like in an Instant Pot, does that kind of lead to more heavy metals? Is there a chance that we can cause like heavy metal poisoning drinking bone broth like every day? And no, that's not a thing. So I looked into a study, and it said, similarly, the acidification of bone broth increased the amount of copper extracted by a factor of 2, but for the increases in lead, chromium, and aluminum were smaller and mostly not significant. And I was like, okay, cool. So it's not pulling out all these other heavy metals. It's really just pulling out the calcium and magnesium and minerals that our body needs. So that's a good thing.
So it's all reward and no risk.
Yeah, exactly. So you might as well do it. And I thought maybe, and this is my own bias, and just to be perfectly honest, I thought for sure that this study measuring bone broths from different animals, that, what do you call cows, was going to come out on top. I was like, oh yeah, cows are fucking awesome. I was like, I'm like so pro cows, ridiculous, right?
Well, they come out on top on most other subjects, so yeah, I would think so.
They do, right? So this study, they measured two breeds of pigs, so a white pig and a black pig, and then cows. And it's true that cows, from like a lower cooking time, there was more mineral content in the cow's bone broth, but if you cook these things long enough, they ended up being pretty similar with their calcium and magnesium content between pigs and cows. And, I mean, that's a good thing. I guess I was kind of disappointed, but, you know, whatever. They're bones. Bones are bones, you know?
Yeah.
So, there's not much more you can do.
Well, I mean, I guess that makes sense because, yeah, like, all bones should be relatively similar. You're not talking about muscles and organs and all this other thing.
Yeah.
And if they're using the same amount of weight, it should be about the same.
Yeah, exactly.
And one thing, yeah, I've noticed since I've switched over to pork bones is you can reuse bones pretty much over and over again until they like crumble apart.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
So with the pork bones, they crumble apart when I take them out.
Oh, after one round?
After one, yeah.
Oh, so my beef bones don't.
So yeah, like I had the same thing with beef. A lot of times, like I would take forever for all that bone marrow to cook out. Sometimes, mm-hmm, I would just throw them away because there'd still be somewhere on the rim.
Yeah.
But with the pork bones, they are a lot smaller bones.
Yeah.
So I'll get like a butter knife or a knife to scoop out the bone marrow because I want all that shit. I'm not leaving that in the bones to throw it away.
Yeah, that's why you got it.
Yeah, when I do that, the bones usually break apart, no problem.
Okay. That's pretty cool. Actually, were you telling me, oh no, you weren't talking about bone broth, how like ancient societies used to pass around bones to different families?
That was not me.
Yeah, okay, I must have read that in the book. I'm getting it all confused now. Hey, trust me, if you want a glimpse into my life, just think every time you have like a podcast topic, I have so many damn tabs open on my laptop about bone broth right now. It all kind of runs together, you know what I mean? But yeah, back in the day, they used to actually share these bones around like village tribes. So one person or one family would get these bones, boil them, get bone broth. And then like you said, the bones are done. So they would give the bones to the families, and they would share these bones, and get everyone would reap the benefits of bone broth just off one set of bones from one cow.
And if we're talking cows, like I've left cow bones in my crock pot for like 3 days, and like they're still not done. Just imagine what it was like for like a woolly mammoth.
Oh yeah, exactly. The bones are bigger than us.
Yeah, and we're talking not controlled fire. I doubt they were going for 72 hours straight.
No.
Yeah, I'm sure you could cook that shit for like a month and it would be fine.
Exactly, yeah. And just think, they're just so smart back in the day, man. That ancient knowledge it's real. It really is. We've forgotten so much as we've kind of advanced, quote unquote, you know? So yeah, pretty much you don't have to worry about heavy metals when you think about bone broth. You don't have to worry about getting the toxins from the bones in bone broth. You're really just going to be getting the vitamins and minerals you need. So I wouldn't worry about that. And I don't really hear people talk about that. That was just kind of my own thought process.
And if it is something you are worried about, you can buy bones from grass-fed cows or just like properly raised animals. That's not an issue.
Yeah, that's true.
That's one good thing about bone broth being a lot more trendy is most of the companies that are making it, like the store-bought ones, are coming from grass-fed cows, free-range chickens, you know, that type of thing.
So yeah, so that's it about bone broth. It's really healthy stuff. It's full of just nutrients, really helping our joints, our bones, our skin. So I personally have a glass now post-workout, and I don't do it every day, but I make a batch, and I pretty much use the fat to cook with now, and I drink the kind of gelatinous juice underneath all the fat post-workout just to help my skin and my joints.
See, that's funny that you do a post-workout. I do a pre-workout because it's an easy way to get a lot of salt in my diet.
Okay.
Instead of just taking a salt shot.
I'm so used to taking salt shots, though.
It's still just not good.
I know.
I'm trying to get used to that. I just haven't been able to.
Yeah.
So I normally just do some bone broth. Since, like, the homemade one is really fatty, I normally don't, like, drink that then go to the gym. I drink it 30 minutes before I go to the gym.
There's so much fat on that shit. It's like a little meal.
Yeah.
It's like butter coffee.
Yeah. So, like, I don't do it immediately pre-workout, but I do it slightly before workout. And if I'm not active that day, normally I'll make that, sip on it while I'm, like, cooking dinner.
Okay.
So it's like an appetizer for me.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, man. I don't like the taste of bone broth.
Oh, I love it.
See, I think you're weird as shit. I do not like the taste of bone broth. I just drink it really, I mean, I add a shit ton of salt, and so it really just tastes like salted, warm, like brown water, to be honest, but I just drink it because I know it's good for my body, and in this lifting game specifically, you need your joints to stay healthy. So I don't want to have bad shoulders, I don't want to have bad knees, so if drinking bone broth is what I have to do, this is what I'm going to do.
I think you just got to play around with the seasonings and maybe cut back the salt a little bit.
I know.
I've made some really salty bone broth before, and it was disgusting. Yeah. I had to, like, take a sip, chug some water. It was like just taking
balance it out.
It was like taking a shot.
Yeah, you need chaser.
Yeah, it was just horrible. But most of the time, I just add a bunch of seasonings. I'll add some turmeric, some pepper, maybe some rosemary, kind of whatever sounds good at the moment.
Yeah, I haven't really dialed in the seasoning yet. I'll say that much. I haven't given it much of a chance. I've kind of just said, this sucks. So
yeah, well, kind of once you do that, it just tastes like, you know, if you were to eat soup and then you were like drink the broth after, that's what it tastes like.
Okay.
Except that now it's got a lot more fat in it.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I need to be better with that. Yeah. But all right, so do you have a tip of the week this week?
Yeah, this one is about scheduling your habits. So having healthy habits is the key to living a healthy lifestyle. So when something becomes a habit, it's no longer a choice that we have to make. Like, do you think about putting on socks before you wear shoes?
No.
It's a habit. You've been doing it for 30 years of your life. Like, it would feel weird if you didn't, if you, like, put your shoes on first.
Yep.
Like, that's what it's talking about having a habit. So in Gretchen Rubin's book, Better Than Before, she discusses how helpful it is to schedule habits when you're trying to form them. So especially, like, in the beginning. So if you want to read more, schedule that into your day. So, like, if you're scheduled to work, then you go to work. There's no choice. You don't think about going to work. Like, that decision is already made. If you're scheduled to work, but then you don't go, that's when you're actually spending energy. You're, like, thinking about it. You know, I don't feel good. What kind of excuse can I make to not go to work? Like, if I don't go to work, what am I going to do today? Like, it takes a lot of energy to not do something than it does to do something. If that makes sense.
That's such a great point. That does make sense. Yeah. Everyone knows that feeling when you call into work. Everyone knows that anxiety.
Yeah. And that's a big choice.
It is a big choice.
Yeah. Even if it's something that you don't want to do and you don't feel like obligated to, like in school, if you're going to play hooky, like you still need kind of a reason to play hooky. You're not just going to skip it because like, I don't feel like going. It's like normally, oh, I'm going to go do this instead.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's really helpful to schedule like new habits in the morning. That's when your willpower is at its highest and the day tends to get more chaotic as it goes on. So, hey, you know, something will happen. Maybe you'll get busier at work. Well, if you schedule something early in the morning, you already got it done out of the way. That's one of the reasons I like working out early in the morning. I know you do too.
Yep, exactly.
Like if you work out in the morning, it doesn't matter what happens the rest of the day. You already got your workout in.
Exactly.
You don't have to worry about anything getting in the way.
And you can't emphasize that enough. That's such a key part of this whole game. It's so important.
Yeah, because like, hey, life is always going to come up with something. Life's going to get in the way. Maybe your car breaks down. But if you already got in that, whatever you wanted to do before your car broke down, you still did it.
Exactly, you still did it.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways that you can use scheduling to your advantage. One of the easiest ways, and I think this is so important if you're trying to eat healthier, is meal prepping. So basically what you're doing with meal prepping is you're scheduling out your meals for the week. You're so much more likely to eat healthy if you already have your meals scheduled and made for you. Like you're not going to go to McDonald's because you're hungry because you already had dinner or you already had lunch prepared for you. Like what are you going to do with that food that you already scheduled? You're just going to throw it away? People aren't that wasteful.
Yeah, and that's crazy too, the way you're wording this now. I guess I never thought of it this way, but how often like I know what's for dinner. It's already made. It's ground heart, shocker. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I know what I'm going to have. It's not a question. So many people leave work. They're stressed. They're tired. They don't. What's for dinner? Oh, I don't know. They just stop by some drive-thru.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, like, this is just trying. All we're trying to do with these habits is just removing choice from the equation. You make choices all day that leads to decision fatigue. And that makes you make, like, poor decisions. So, like, we're just trying to remove choice from the equation. Just have all these options already laid out for you. And like, if you're trying to read more, join a book club that meets up. So like that way you have it on your schedule. I have to have chapters 1 through 5 read by this day. And then you're going to go and you're going to read more. Like it's just holding yourself more accountable.
Yeah. No, that's a great tip.
Yeah. So like personally, I have 2 races scheduled for later this year. But Recently, I was skipping a lot of my longer, like, weekly training sessions. You know, I had the time. I was just making a bunch of excuses. I was kept saying to myself, I don't have the time to go out and run. Really, I just didn't want to go out and run. It's been hot as shit lately.
It has been hot, yeah.
So one, my solution to this problem was I just joined a training club, a trail running club. They meet up once a week. They have these scheduled runs once a week. See, now that they have these scheduled runs, it's so much easier for me to just go out and meet up with them and then go running with them. Ever since I joined that club, I've hit that every single weekend.
Does the club have a name?
It's Trail Running Adventures. They're out of Auburn. So it's a bit of a drive.
So you run in Auburn?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Okay.
But the good thing about that is it's not as hot as it is in Lodi or Antioch.
Yeah.
And it's really scenic. It's a lot of places that I haven't been before.
Okay.
And it's so much easier running with somebody than running by yourself.
Okay.
I think it was last week I talked about how I cut off 30 seconds of my like average pace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cut off another minute running with somebody else.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. So it's like, obviously I had a lot more in the tank and just wasn't really realizing it. So just like having that group, having that social setting made me such a faster runner.
Yeah. And like you said, we talked about this a little bit prior, having someone better than you, it shows you what's capable. It shows you, oh, this person's not better than me. He's just trained more. He just knows a little more. I can do that.
Oh yeah.
You can keep that pace.
Yeah. And it's so helpful to have people around you that even if they don't know more than you overall, they're going to know different things. So like one of the people I was running with, we were just talking back and forth. I know a lot about nutrition. If you guys have been listening to this podcast, hopefully you guys have learned a couple things from me.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of giving him some ideas about that. And he's been running for over 15 years. I'm kind of new to the game. So he's just telling me about like, I should really invest in getting a vest instead of like a little like fanny pack belt that I have.
Okay.
Which I bought for $10 from Walmart because I realized I needed something. I was like, oh yeah, I probably should get a vest.
Okay.
Recommended a bunch of books for me to read and just kind of... Trail running is a little bit different than other types of running because, like, there's obstacles in the way. So it just kind of gave me some advice on, like, how to... You can't, like, look down the whole way because if you run for 50 miles with your head down, your body mechanics are all out of whack.
Okay.
So there's, like, some techniques involved with that.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's just kind of, like, those little tips that I wouldn't have picked up on my own.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. So, you know, it's definitely helpful to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, schedule this stuff and then you're so much more likely to do it.
Boom. That's a great tip of the week. I love that tip. I love that. So that's something I do kind of subconsciously nowadays.
Yeah. I mean, once these habits are formed, you don't really need to schedule them because they're a habit.
Exactly.
But like if it's something that you're trying to establish, like then you really do need to, hey, just writing it down makes you so much more likely. I think it's 5 times more likely that you're going to accomplish something once you write it down.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's a great tip of the week. Well, all right, that's another episode in the books. Thank you for listening. You can find us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at tntwellnessandnutrition@gmail.com. So feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe to our podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and SoundCloud.
Oh, and remember, we're on YouTube now as well.
Good point. Yeah, we actually are adding a lot more stuff to that now.
Yeah.
And also, like, if you know somebody else who would get the benefits of bone broth, which is everybody, this is a hole in many people's games, send them this podcast. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.